Maybe one reason it took so long to figure out how to do something athletes know is that old stereotype of the athlete as dumb jock, which is not just insulting, it's also wrong, literally. Neuroscientist John Krakauer can prove it. He studies skilled athletes, and he says what sets them apart isn't just physical, it's cognitive condition. Here's John talking with Steve Paulson.
When you admire an athlete, where should the credit go? You know, Michael Jordan, does he jump higher? Does he have a shorter reaction time? Does he throw further? No. I mean, if you were to compare those low-level abilities with 20 other basketball players of his generation, he probably wouldn't stand out. So you have to sort of go up a notch to explain what it is that made him so much better over and over again.
So it's not just sheer athleticism.
No,
it's something else.
It's something else. In other words, this ability to, in clutch play, make the right decision and execute that decision simultaneously.
So it sounds like what you're saying is we're really talking about the brains of athletes. I mean, this is not generally what one tends to think about when it comes to, you know, what sets the star athlete apart
from
everyone else.
Yes, I mean, people will, you know, maybe, oh, they have bigger muscles, you know, or they're just very tall if they're a basketball player, that it's something physical. But no, I think one has to give just as much credit to the nervous system of an athlete as one would to a mathematician or a musician.
So what's happening in their brains?
Well, I mean, making the right decisions and being tactical during a match is probably not that different from any other cognitive activity, you know, writing a poem or working out how you're going to arrange your troops on the battlefield. All right. So there, it'll probably end up being in prefrontal cortex like anything else. When it comes to precision, in other words, how can it be that somebody like Roger Federer can hit the ball faster than us and get it in more often? Well, that is probably going to be more about motor cortical areas. I mean, they've done that work on musicians, for example. There seems to be expansion, if I may say, of representation of fingers in good pianists.
Are we talking about the old 10,000 hours of practice kind
well,
of thing?
Yes.
The more you do it, there's that old phrase,
we
muscle memory.
Well, muscle memory is one of those terms, a little bit like nervous breakdown, that doesn't really mean much to scientists. But I think what muscle memory means is this idea of a control policy, like an intelligent reflex. What do I mean by that? I mean that you've practiced and practiced until, for example, your ATM code, or even when you type. In other words, I'm not sure if I were to ask you right now, write out all the letters of the keys of your keyboard. You're probably not going to be able to do it.
No, I wouldn't be able to do that.
But your fingers know where the letters are.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So in other words, I think what people mean by muscle memory is that through practice, which originally did require very explicit looking down at the keys, seeing where the A is, and then you keep doing that until eventually it seems as though even though you can no longer declaratively state where the letters are on the keyboard, you seem to now know when you put your hands down on it. I do this all the time. I don't know my ATM number, but my finger does. Now imagine, instead of just practicing your ATM code, which is relatively simple in terms of the finger movements you need to make, you had to practice a much more elaborate kind of action, like a serve, for example, or a free throw. And that, too, can automatize the way your ATM number does. Then you can imagine athletes who've been practicing for 10,000 hours establishing a repertoire of stored subroutines that have been automatized. And then what you can do is you can devote your actual expensive thought time to what you're going to do with those building blocks that you have now well established. Whereas for amateurs, we're spending too much time still working on the building blocks.
There's that split second of what should we do now? Whereas you're saying with a professional athlete, they know.
I mean, you can go, and again, I can give the example. You could go up to your ATM machine and you could type in your PIN number and also be talking to me.
Right.
All right. Whereas if you don't know your PIN number, you are not going to be able to devote any cognitive space to anything else other than trying to think about what it is. So I think what makes athletes so good is that they can clear up cognitive space to make much higher level decisions down on building blocks that have been well and truly stored and cached.
Now, there's that old phrase, time slows down for certain people. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Not really. I mean, I think I'll give you an example of why people might think that. I mean, in tennis, good tennis players will predict where the server is serving the ball just by the trunk rotation of the server before the ball anywhere near leaves the racket of the server. Okay, now, if you're an amateur tennis player, you're basically going to start responding when the ball is close to leaving or having left the server's racket. If you think that the reaction time is after the ball has left the racket, you'll come under the impression that the professional tennis player has had so much more time to react. Well, that's an illusion because their reaction time should be time-stamped to when they started to see the trunk rotate.
Hmm.
Do you see? So, yeah. In other words, they've had a genuinely longer time.
Now, you're a tennis player
yes,
yourself,
Yes, I used
right?
to be. I used to play a lot. I play more squash now.
So, does all this knowledge of how the brain works, especially in the minds of athletes, is that useful at all for you as an athlete?
No, I don't think it's useful for me to make me any better, unfortunately. It does make me realize more what's going on when I'm getting trained, for example. This interplay between instruction and learning is very interesting to me. So, you know, the notorious thing in squash, for example, is you hate it when the ball goes and hits off the back wall and you're pinned against the back wall
right.
and you start scraping and flailing about trying to get the ball out of the corner. And then you can have a professional squash coach tell you, you know, take your time, turn around completely, don't follow the ball all the way to the back wall, let it go and wait for it to come back. And it's amazing how just a few sentences like that can lead to a qualitative jump in the quality of your performance. So it's this interplay between whatever needs to happen to your nervous system when it keeps practicing something and these little leaps of realization that give you a much bigger jump than you would ever obtain if you kept practicing doing it the wrong way.
Well, what you're talking about is the virtues of a great teacher or a great coach. I mean, they really can transform how well
right.
you can
it's
do
just
this
that I
thing.
Think that a lot of people, because they think there's something low-level, mindless, non-cognitive, motor, implicit about being good at sport, that they tend to downplay how much instruction matters to the same degree that it does when you get told the rules of grammar in your Latin class. So in other words, I think there's a bias. I mean, hence this article we wrote where we said, is the dumb jock really a nerd? Why do we have the term dumb jock? What is the implication? It is that you can be very, very good at sport and be dumb. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd never say you could be really, really good at math and be dumb, although we would say that you could be a nerd and be rubbish at sport.
Right.
And that dichotomy is actually not justified, in my view.
That's John Krakauer. He's a neuroscientist at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and he was talking with Steve Paulson.